Hey SEOs and content marketers, say goodbye to crazy spreadsheet mashups and experience unprecedented connectivity between your SEO planning and reporting data. Introducing Audience Key, technology for keyword mapping, content brief automation, and rank tracking that form an SEO strategy system providing unparalleled feedback loops between planning, reporting, and optimization activities. Put your time and energy into strategy, not data upkeep. Visit audiencekey.com and apply for a free trial today.
September 2024. This is Jim Hedger from Digital Always Media and Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls.
Hey, everybody.
And I can't, Christine, I can't believe it's the 12th of September. I mean, I know. This is the problem with having a weekly show is time goes by so much faster.
So fast.
It is the middle of September, which means it is nearly the end of third quarter, which means it's reporting season. And everyone's going to be busy going, loopy, preparing their quarterly reports for their clients and all that sort of stuff. And if you had to report on really important metrics, stuff that clients just couldn't do without, what they need to know, what would you be including in your third quarter metrics?
What clients need to know?
Yeah, I mean, like there's been changes. We just been through the core update, August 2024 core update. There's talk that there might have been some shifting in the helpful content area. We've been through a spam update. We've been through the March 2024 update and the all stuff in between. So, you know, what metrics? The core web vitals are still on the table. What metrics are you reporting that, you know, you've improved or we need to work on because, you know, third quarter reporting? What do you say is up there?
I would say instead of reporting, everyone should at this end of year get themselves a site audit. I'm doing a lot of site audits this year, and I'm seeing so many silly things that have really hurt sites. Like, just silly stuff that shouldn't be a problem. So, like, what I'm looking at right now, their pages are all blank in Google, and none of the normal suspects are doing it. But had I not audited the site, they would have launched it with blank pages for Google.
Okay, so you're saying get your technical in order. In fact, there's a whole bunch of different metrics you want to look at, and site audit will reveal many of them.
Yeah, because the technical is hidden, right? So the sites go down. I'm doing core update recoveries right now, and every core update is predominantly technical, at least in my experience of recovering sites. All the sites have recovered. All of them had major technical issues, and it doesn't matter what size you are. A lot of people go, well, you don't need it if you're not a big site. No. Small sites have big technical issues too. In fact, sometimes they have the worst ones. So if Google can't crawl and index your site properly, you're never going to do as well in search as you could, no matter how good your content is, no matter how many links you have. So I would just get someone to review your site, review your content, review your site, review your technical, make sure you're set to go for the new year. Because right after the shopping holiday, if you're e-commerce, you know, you got 3 or 4 weeks in there where you can just do some real work and get things like up to speed for next year. Because when Google rolls out its algorithms in the beginning of the new year, all that new work will get swept up in there. And you might see some improvements just from that. So I think that's what I would tell people, because too many sites don't do audits until they get hit by an algorithm.
So I just brought a new client on board, a florist, interestingly enough, using a oddly familiar content management system. And these are wonderful people. They don't know a lot about web marketing. They don't know a lot about their own website. They just bought the business. They come from the academic and finance sectors, not the retail sector. So first-time business people in retail. So I'm trying to explain how Search Console works and GA4 works and what metrics they need to be interested in and why. And this is why I asked the question initially. And again, I have other clients, corporate clients, and I can't believe it's the 12th of September, Christine. I had the two weeks of just recording numbers and trying to tell stories based on numbers. And so What I want to talk about this quarter is indexability, is how many pages are in the index, why they're in the index, why Google has chosen to go after these pages and not these pages. So, like, I've been trying to prove a point to this one e-com client. I'm really interested in crawled but not indexed right now. Helps me, trust me, this is helping me prove a point. There's a bunch of interesting metrics that I think should be in these reports that we're not talking about with clients that actually tell the story about how Google really feels about their website.
That's very true. And we know now, well, you and I knew for a while, but we know because Google came out, most people should know now, is that discovered, not indexed, crawled, not indexed. These are very specific comments on your website. And when you see those in high quantity, you need to go look at the definition by clicking the little information link in GSC. And that'll take you to those to the definitions. And one is about technical, basically. The discovered, not indexed, is like, well, we don't want to index these pages because there's something wrong with them. They're heavyweights. So, and that's what it actually says in the documentation. So, yeah, you definitely want to check those out.
Coincidentally, sometimes you'll see that they were spidered, what, in like 1969. They were crawled back in 69, which of course couldn't possibly happen, right?
True.
So why does that happen? Because Google is just kind of assigning a weirdo date to it because it knows that it's there. It hasn't spidered it for like ever. It's probably not going to until it senses a major change in the page. And for some reason, they assigned that 1969 date.
Yeah, there is actually a reason for that, but I've forgotten what it is. It's a programming reason, but my guess is it
That was
allows
the
them.
indicator that was so massive that Google
Yeah.
wants to know it's there. It sees value in this page, but it doesn't want to be unpacking this stuff over and over and over
Yeah.
again, so it's not gonna. And that's a
Yeah.
signal to you, to you, the webmaster.
Exactly. Yeah. People really, it's really just important that you get your sites audited. If you're a big company and you have a lot of development going on, at least once a quarter. And if you're a small company or small business, like once a year, and if you're a small business, you can actually deduct it from your taxes. It's considered a legit, there's actually a special section. But if you're a small business, if you get your site audited, your website audited. But people really need to do that because what happens is if you don't, you wake up one day, an algorithm rolls out and your traffic's down 80, 90%, and then you're stuck for 6 months, or in the case of the HCU, we're talking over almost a year now.
Just a quick note to American small businesses out there. While we're not your tax advisors, we're happy to talk to them on your
No,
behalf.
true, true, true. But you can look it up. It is in the IRS tax code and
Indeed,
on
indeed.
TurboTax.
Yeah, again, while we're not tax advisors, we're very happy to
No.
talk to your tax advisors on
Yes.
your behalf. Maybe
Yeah.
sell them a couple bucks package.
Very right, too.
Okay, before we go any further, I really, really, really want to thank our sponsors, Audience Key and Wix Studio. Thank you. They make this conversation possible. So thank you so much, Audience Key and Wix Studio. And quick announcement. It's just worth noting the passing of an incredible podcaster, American British journalist David Knowles. He died in Gibraltar at age 32. He was the journalist behind The Telegraph's remarkable podcast, Ukraine the Latest. A daily podcast that updates people on the war in Ukraine from Ukraine's perspective. I think David Knowles did more to inform people in the West, in the UK, in the United States, in Canada, and France, and Germany, and outside of Ukraine itself about the illegal invasion and occupation of Ukraine by Russia than anybody. He was a beloved voice. He won the Best News Podcast at the Publishers Podcast Award last year. And he again died on Sunday at age 32. He will be incredibly missed.
And just to add on to that, a couple hours ago, it broke that the UK counter-terror police are going to be investigating his death. So that may not have been just a heart attack at 32. And for those who don't know in our industry, many of the tools you use are actually developed by Ukrainian companies or Ukrainian programmers. So there's a heavy heavy interest in the industry for what happens in Ukraine because we have friends and tool makers that are there or have left and are still working on things.
So, again, our hearts out to the Ukraine, the latest team, the Telegraph, David Knowles' family and friends. Again, as a podcaster, the man will be missed. Okay, a lot has happened in the AI world. A lot's happened in the Google world. A lot's happened in the Twixter world. Let's start around OpenAI. They are releasing Strawberry, a new AI model, in 2 weeks. Now, okay, you need a scorecard to keep up with OpenAI's
Oh,
new models.
I figured it out.
Okay.
Okay, I'm gonna be sarcastic here. You're gonna hate it, but every time he needs funding, suddenly something's coming out.
Well,
So
very,
they're looking at
very possibly.
150 billion in funding evaluation for them right now. So that's also on the table right now. So anyway, I'm just teasing.
OpenAI is claiming that Strawberry is capable of advanced reasoning, beyond back and forth responses that current chatbots like provide. Strawberry can perform multi-step tasks based on a single query, can plan ahead, can move through the internet autonomously. It can do what OpenAI is calling deep research. And OpenAI is saying it's not an autonomous AI agent, but it's
But if
a
it's
major
standalone,
step forward.
it can't stand alone. It's not necessarily related to Search GPT, and it's possibly going to be available in the drop down of in the ChatGPT app. We'll see. I just know that I just read a whole bunch of research from some really big names in the industry about the ability of these models to reason. So I guess we'll see when it comes out what the analysis is.
It's not reasoning. It's a facsimile of reasoning.
Yes, that's true.
I mean, like
But
this is the important thing to keep in mind about AI models is they're not thinking, but they are so complex and they're weighing so many, an insane range of possibilities. It's a reasonable facsimile of thinking sometimes.
it is. But he's saying it's actually going to reason and think. So we'll see when it comes out if that's what it really does. Because he's also released a few other things where they said they're going to do it was going to do stuff and it didn't do stuff. So let's see. But I would say the only thing I would, for people in our industry, I would say people should really do some research on how these models work because every day I see people buying in, like spending money on things that the models can't actually do because someone's like selling a tool and says it can do it. And you really want to know how these work because they look like they do all, some things that they, like you said, are a facsimile of doing. So it's not thinking, it's just like Ryan Jones, you know, in our industry, our friend too, yesterday put out something about, I think it was keywords or something. And then he asked it for the caloric intake of the keywords and it gave him numbers because he wanted to prove that point that it's just generated text. So just be careful when you use these that you don't put more stock into the result than you should. So.
And just for people, especially our friends on the West Coast, caloric intake of keywords is not a metric. Just in case you're wondering, I mean, like, you'd only have some the weight of keywords on your page, right? Like,
Yeah, I have
yeah.
this new app and it goes through my refrigerator and it takes all the keywords and it tells me how many calories there are.
Indeed,
I'm
it's a
totally
bit.
joking.
AI is amazing, including, and watch your back, Christine. Google's got an AI that apparently you can take your notes, write up notes from a meeting or from a lecture or your coverage of a news event or whatever. Feed it into audio overviews, and it will generate what Google is calling a lively podcast.
Lively audio
Duos.
discussion featuring two AI hosts.
Two hosts going at it based on your notes.
It's launching in a notebook LM today. The people that actually have used it said it's kind of cheesy and they kind of thought it was a little silly, but we'll see. Maybe it'll become a thing. I don't know really why you would need that except to entertain yourself, maybe.
Well, you know, I mean, like, if WMR could pay us less, they would,
What's less than zero?
I know what you're planning, Darren. I can see it in your eye, in your little cyber eyes over there.
The subscription would cost more than we cost now, so I think we're safe for
For now.
now. But I did say it was they're trying to work on it because it says it sounds kind of like cheesy and forced. It says where is it?
Well, yeah, there's a little script here, which sounds very much like "See Dick Run, Run Dick Run."
Pretty much one male and one female voice.
But you know
So
what? This is how it is today. I remember the internet in 1995. It's very different than the internet is today.
true.
30 years later, the internet today is infinitely more useful and navigable.
So Emily Dry, I'm gonna butcher this name. Jibelbis from PC Mag, her quote was, "The Google demos the technology by creating an audio overview of the feature's press release. And in the 8-minute clip, two generated voices, one male and one female, sound authentic, but the conversation veers into infomercial territory that is hard to listen to. So if you want to listen to it, you can go to PC Mag. Google AI turns your notes into a lively podcast with two fake hosts." We're not fake, though. We're real, as you can tell, because,
For the most part.
for the most
Or
part.
you know what? Fire up Notebook LM and make your own fake podcast. Gosh
There
darn
we
it.
go.
See if it's as hard working as we are.
I bet it's not.
I
But if
bet
they
it's
don't have a
not.
grid.
They don't. Okay, so we have a grid, a story grid that we keep and make up each week, and it's literally packed with stories. This one is 36 layers deep. And we can go back in time. We can look at the history of stories and all that sort of stuff with our grid. It's actually quite efficient. And you still need a scorecard to keep up with Google's antitrust cases because, by my count, we have four of them on the board, three of which are active right now. Am I wrong? First off, we got four on the board. Four of them are happening out there. And three of them are actually in the courts, winding their way through. And Google's looking kind of scroogled.
It's hard to keep up. Like we talked before the show today to figure out which ones we're actually talking about because there's so many. I think the first thing though would be good to start with is that Google and Apple both lost their final appeals today in the EU case.
Google is well. Google's appealing. They already lost the case. This was a $2.6 billion or 2.4 billion euro antitrust fine, which was fell on the heels of a 13 billion euro, which is like 14.3 billion American demand from the EU and back taxes from Apple. These
Apple's
fine
13 billion. Sorry, I didn't
no,
mean
we
to
have
ask
13,
you.
yeah, 13 billion, 13 billion
Yeah.
euro, 14.3 billion US dollars. The EU is slapping the EU is not afraid to slap big tech, the EU isn't funded by big tech. Congress, for the most part, is. That's the difference.
There's a lot of that. And this was our final appeal. So they're not getting out of this one. So
No,
Google is
but
gonna pay 2.6 billion and Apple's pay 4.3 billion
14.3
in US. In US.
billion.
14, I'm sorry, 14.3 billion in US.
Now, I know Apple's not no NVIDIA, but they still got a lot of money.
They do. I mean, these are trillion-dollar companies, right? But still, those are pretty substantial fines.
Oh,
So
they are. Now these fines were triggered. Google's fine was triggered in response to a case brought by price comparison sites, including Foundum and Kalku, alleging that Google was giving preference to its own shopping recommendations against those of rivals. Y'all know how the case went. Google said, "No, we're not." EU the prosecutor said, "Yes, you are." EU said, "Huh? So you are." And this is where we ended up.
Yeah, Google never did that,
Google's got A kind of similar case that is currently working its way through courts in California, like underway right now.
Yeah,
And
started
this is
this
the
week.
one about DoubleClick. Okay, so I don't know if anybody remembers, but in 2008, was it 2008, 2007, Google purchased one of the largest display ad networks, DoubleClick. So Google was throwing, Google pretty much owned PPC ads, paid advertising at that point, right? And then suddenly they bought the largest display ad network in the world. That
Sure.
kind of that's like Walmart heft in the retail world. That's incredible heft. That's both ends of the advertising of on-page advertising. And that was now owned by Google. So that's what's up in court right now.
And
And oh, sorry.
in the emails in the court case, by the way, there's a reporter, Jason Kint on KINT on Twitter, is tweeting things out from the case as it's going on. One of the emails said the Google exec claimed company's goal was to crush other networks. I
Yes,
do
that's
not think
David
this will go well
Rosenblatt.
for them. Yeah, I don't think it's going to go well for them.
No, so they, yeah, so they, this is what the prosecution's introduced into evidence. So yeah, and then so we'll see how this one unwinds. Google has already been called a monopoly over the way it treats paid ads, and now it's being called a monopoly over well, now it is, you know, straight up over the display ads. And all of these rulings against Google could actually have an impact on Google's revenue picture. I mean, to be honest,
Oh, definitely.
what's a few billion between friends?
Yeah. And Google defends its ad business by saying success isn't illegal. And that's actually true, though. So if people don't know monopoly law, and I'm not a big expert, but I know just a little about what's going on in this case, is a monopoly is not illegal. You can have a monopoly that's like a positive, that helps people, that doesn't kill the market, that doesn't aggressively go after competitors and take them down, crush the networks, right? But if you're doing the other part where you're going to crush the networks, as the executive said in his email, then you're probably not acting in a way that's a positive monopoly, and therefore, positive is my word, that is not the legal term. Therefore, you come under these laws, and that's what Google is finding itself. It's finding that it acted aggressively and it kept the market closed, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's a monopoly that can be acted upon. So when Google says success isn't illegal, they're right, but unfortunately, their actions might have been.
Google made $77.5 billion on digital advertising last year, which is about a quarter of the total market share. So, of all the money spent in the entire world on digital advertising, a quarter of it, or $77.5 billion, went into Google's was revenue for Google. That's just such a that's
A little
a
bit of money,
tremendous number.
a little bit of cash. What would you do with 77 billion, Jim?
I challenge Elon Musk to a fight is what I do. What do you think?
Oh, you don't want to know, but that's actually been coming
Oh
back
no,
into view.
we're
We
not
will
talking
not
about
cover
that
it.
again.
We
I
will
was
not
joking.
cover it. No, it came up last week. Anyway, go
I don't
ahead.
want to talk about that again. Like, honest to God, because that's stupid and that's what actually
I
happens. In which case, I want to announce it.
If it happens, I'm going to get a front row seat because you're sure it's going to happen in Vegas. So
Indeed.
anyway, yeah.
Okay, so where to now? There's how to say this. There's going to be some companies that are going to be winners and losers in the AI era. And you know, it may be too soon to tell because there's a whole bunch of hype and silliness around AI, and there's a whole bunch of very serious background development in AI. And it seems a lot of that serious background development in AI was actually done years ago and invested in years ago, and now we're seeing the output of those investments and those decisions. And some companies didn't make those decisions. Some did and some didn't. And Apple, Amazon, you know, Alexa, these companies feel like they didn't make those decisions, yet Apple spent so much energy putting a iPhone in every pocket. Alexa or Amazon spent so much time putting an Alexa in every living room. Yet their AI in both cases is very much lacking. It's really weird to me.
Yeah, well, two things. One, the origin of the story is this week they rolled out their new phones, and as an Android user, when all your iPhone friends post all their new features, you're like, "Oh, I had that for like 2 years now. Great, awesome. Glad you get to use that now." So, apparently, though, they're once it was in the real world, it's not adding up. So apparently, they're LLM models are kind of dumb, and according to Jeffrey Fowler at the Washington Post, he said, "So Apple's AI will. So will Apple? I cannot speak. So will Apple's AI be worth it? Testing a pre-release version of the software, I found sometimes helpful, sometimes laugh out loud, weird. Like at times, it alerted me that Donald Trump had endorsed Tim Walz for president. Tim Walz is the VP candidate, for the Democrats. So that would not happen. He made up the idea that he's teaching at UC Berkeley, and that." The Social Security scam that came into his inbox, they made it a priority. So unfortunately, it looks like it's possible they may have released it too soon. He told people they should hold off on spending the $799 right now and keep your iPhone 16.
You missed the worst of them all.
Which
This
one?
is
Which one of them?
clearly a middle-aged guy who, has a teacher. I mean, heck, he's a writer for the Washington Post, so he's not an unaccomplished person. And this software edited a selfie to make him look bald.
Oh, that's
What
right. I missed that.
is that guy to the do? What's that going to do to the guy's Tinder account? I mean,
Exactly.
like, this is scary stuff, Christopher.
Well, yeah. So apparently, Apple Intelligence makes a lot of stuff up. That is basically the conclusion. And it's not just his. I read other stories, and they said the same thing. So if you're like, do I spend $800 right now on this for the AI? He's advising probably not. I don't have an Apple phone, so I don't know. But then their other big thing that they added was basically Google Lens, which as an Android user I've had for some time. But Apple Visual Intelligence, Local Shopping, and More is the article from Search Engine Roundtable, and it announced the Apple Visual Intelligence, where you can take a phone photo of anything, and Apple Intelligence for local search, shopping, homework help, and more will help you figure out what it is. I know some people in our industry thought it might be a changer for local, but since you have to be in the location and take a picture of the thing, I don't think that's gonna, because if I'm already at the location seeing the thing, I probably know how to get there. I probably have already looked it up. So I don't know if that's gonna, and I know Google Lens hasn't been any big game changer.
If it if it
We'll see.
if on the spot, my partner Shauna holds an iPhone in her hand. So if she can take a picture on the spot, we're in some the big box retail store, and she takes a picture of cereal and compares it to prices at all the other grocery stores. I mean, I could see that being useful on the spot. That would be actually kind of cool.
It's definitely useful on the spot, but like Google Lens we've had for a while, and mostly Google Lens just takes you to products. So I'll put like take a photo of something and it sends me to a product result, and I'm like, I was just trying to figure out what this thing is. I don't really need a product related to it.
You know what everybody here wants to know, eh? How do we manipulate those results?
Exactly. So we'll see if it's better in Apple, but I don't think it's going to be a big game changer for local just because. If you're going to the restaurant, like my friends and I go to the Smith Center, which is our we go we have musical theater season tickets, and we go to dinner and we arrange where we want to go to dinner ahead of time. We make the reservation online. That doesn't happen when I get there. That happens like a week before we go. So unless you can actually take a picture of it, it's really, I don't think it's going to really help you do anything local. But people need to know that Apple phones are 50% of Google search market, so it's important to keep up with these things.
Well,
See if it does
I can
become a
give you
thing.
a, you know what? I can give you a design tip right now. Stand where somebody would know about waist height, where somebody would take a picture of your product, and make sure that there's descriptive text and bright colors, so you can, and a great contrast between the text and the background color, so that text is really clearly readable by something that's doing object recognition.
Yeah, that's very true.
If you
Yeah,
want to,
definitely.
honest to goodness, that's what I'd be telling people when it comes to AIs and image searches. Make it as clear as possible for the AI to figure out what the hell this image is.
I think the thing that it'll be hard for people at first, because I don't know if it's going to be tracked, is if they're using this and they're buying stuff with it. So they see something and it pulls up a product search. If I did it on my Android, they know it came from my Android phone, right? And from Lens. I don't know if they're going to know that from Apple's intelligence. So if you see a whole bunch of like product searches, you can't identify where they came from. It could be Apple. And I don't know that they're not going to track it. I just don't know that there's a differentiator to tell you whether it's Apple's, you know, they came from an Apple phone, from search, or they came from their visual intelligence product.
Speaking of tracking, this is not on our grid, and I'm throwing a bit of a curveball at you. I apologize, but do you know of anything out there that is honestly tracking appearances of a name or a brand or a website in AI overviews or other generative AI result sets? And if you do know of the product, how the hell are they getting away with it without getting burned by Google or Bing?
By the way, you just reminded me of the story I couldn't remember we needed to talk about.
It was the API story.
No, it was the AI overviews now have products in them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, we'll get to yeah, that's all you read us about. Well, we'll get to that.
No,
we will mention it. I'm sure we'll mention it. But honestly, goodness, do you know of any product out there that legitimately tracks appearances in AI overview?
It was supposedly, but I haven't used them, so I don't know if they're accurate. I believe Clarity does. I'm not 100% sure, SEO Clarity. And I do know Semrush just said that they are tracking AI overviews as well. And then there's other smaller tools that have said they're doing it, but it's hard to know how good someone is yet.
Because Google will beat you around the head if you scrape their index for like to see how you're to do like ranking reports, right? If you do this over and over and over again at scale, Google will beat you around the head for it. How do you think Google likes having like, you know, report auto-generated AI overviews over and over and over and over again, simply for reporting purposes? Like, if they can trace it back to where it's coming from, to who's doing that probing, don't you think they'd be pissed?
They might be, and there might be a story in the grid today, but I can't find it. I know I read it earlier today.
Anyway, yes, I'm not, really curious about this. So I had a client ask the other day, and my first response was, well, I don't know of anything out there that's really doing this at scale. And if they were, I think Google would be really mad at them.
Well, I think it would fall under the thing that's been around since the early 2000s, right? You know, using it to check positioning is a no-no, but I don't know how they ever punish anyone for that. Like, I don't know it's you because it goes through a tool. And the tool, so I guess they could block the bots from the tool. But you know, the AI companies just changed their bots. So the one that was pounding Condé Nast, you know, they just changed their bots. So I don't know. We'll have to look that one up.
Okay. I'm really curious about that. Where to next? We got like Twixtra stuff. We have Tenant Media shut down, which is juicy and fun.
Let's do Twixtra first because it's pretty quick stuff. There's not a whole lot of depth to Twixtra this week.
Okay. Neat thing about Brazil. Brazil has a fan culture. Brazilians get into stuff. The most popular website at one time in Brazil, believe it or not, was Google's Orkut. Not because Orkut was a really good social media or social network, which actually it was, but because it was a really cool organizing space.
Orkut yeah, I
gave you,
that.
Yeah, yeah, you remember how Orkut allowed you to like organize in circles and stuff?
Yeah.
Brazilian fans took to this because Brazil has like they have a football or a soccer culture, and they are devoted to their fandom. So X Twixtra, Twitter has been suspended in Brazil because of long story, but mostly because Elon Musk doesn't want to go to court and threaten the judiciary. Like literally threaten the judiciary. So the judiciary said you anyway.
He refused to do it and so they cut him off. And by the way,
he threatened the judge.
Oh yes, right. He did, yes.
And the judge is like, you can't threaten me. Get out of Brazil.
Exactly.
For real.
And but you know what? Did you know that Brazil is their one of their largest user bases of 21 million?
Was.
People?
And,
yes.
And all these fans are now screwed because they were now organizing in Twitter.
The interesting thing, though, is they're not mad about it because they think that their country was right to do it. Yeah. So apparently he has not made many friends in Brazil. So But yeah, so we'll see what happens. But right now, it's a deadlock that the Brazil said you do this by last, was it last week or the week before? He didn't do the thing that they had told him to do, and so they have cut them off completely.
What Brazil's courts had told them to do was take down accounts and posts that violated Brazil's laws around political misinformation and hate speech. It's simple, simple order or simple law that most countries actually have on the books. But Musk is a hate speech absolutist, so he's,
Very much so.
pretty much into having it. And you know who else is really tired of Twixter? The city of San Francisco.
They are, or it might be mutual, but
And I think, well, I think, but yeah, sometimes I just get the feeling that Musk is one of those old guys screaming at the cloud because he has nothing else to do now. He's got more money than anyone else in the world.
yeah, that's true.
Like, honestly, he doesn't hate San Francisco. He just hates that San Francisco makes him follow regulations.
Well,
Remember when he took the name Twitter away and he became X? He took this big X, this massive, massive steel X, and put it on the roof of the building.
yeah, I
But he
remember.
didn't have building permits and he didn't fasten
Yeah.
it down properly.
And they made him take it down.
And he was really pissed about it.
Well, also, on the other side with Tesla, there's severe racism problem in the plants, and they did a two California did a 2-year investigation, and found against Twitter, and soon after he announced they were moving to Austin or Texas, or maybe it wasn't Austin for Tesla, but anyway, they're moving up. They were moving elsewhere to another state. So this is probably all a little bit linked together.
From Musk's point of view, he'd had enough of dodging gangs of violent drug addicts just to get in and out of the building. His neighborhood was too scary, his taxes were too high, and the state was simply too woke. So he was packing X up and moving it to Austin.
Which is funny because Austin's like the woke, if you want to use the word woke,
Well,
part
it's
of Texas.
Austin is one of the most conscious cities
Yeah.
actually in America. And also Austin has a, like most of Texas, has a power problem. Doesn't got enough of it sometimes.
Exactly. Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. You know, when I spoke at South by Southwest a few years back, I walked. Because I was added late, so I had to get a like a Airbnb like CETA at some house like 2 miles away. So I walked the first day in to see what it was like, and there wasn't a single commercial chain restaurant on my 2 mile walk in.
Neat.
So I asked, I was like, "Is that a regulation?" They go, "Oh yeah, they have to stay so far from X other types of businesses." So it's a very regulated city for woke things. So we'll see what happens, how long he stays there.
Yeah, anyway, I just like the word woke because no one can tell me what it really means.
Oh, I know. That's why I'm air quoting it. Not that you can see it, but I'm air quoting it when I say it. Yeah.
Okay, so here's a fun one. Speaking of woke, we touched on this last week, a mysterious DOJ case that was weaving its way, I'm sorry, indictment that was stomping its way across the bank accounts of some very stupid people. Now, as we found out that it's Tenet Media, they were being sponsored by the Russians,
Kremlin, not just the
By the
Russians.
Kremlin's, yeah, the Kremlin's
Yeah.
mouthpiece, Russia Today, which is no longer allowed to operate in the United States and Canada and the UK and France or anywhere in the West because it's sanctioned all the hell, because it is basically Russia's mouthpiece. Tenet Media, which was actually owned by Canadian conservative commentators Lauren Chen and Liam Donovan, but registered in, I believe, Alabama, Arkansas, or one of those Southern A-name states, was the network of right-wing anger vloggers, podcasters, and YouTube in influencers. People like Candace Owen were at one time part of Tenet Media, and again, they
Tim
were
Pool.
being paid, Tim Pool, being
Tim
paid
something.
thousands, tens, or in some cases, hundreds of
Hundreds.
thousands
Hundreds.
to parrot the Kremlin political line and to influence the American conservative movement to, well, basically become the anti-American cult it is today.
I am interested to know though. Jim, if someone said to you today, I'm going to pay you $100,000 per video you as an influencer, what would you think? Would you think, oh, awesome, that seems above board?
Well, you know, I think that Tim Pool and others that appeared on that network absolutely knew what they were doing and absolutely
Exactly.
knew where the money was coming from. And I know that both they and the U.S. Department of Justice are okay with the fiction that they might not have known, but it's not okay. They made this choice and they pushed stuff that I know they knew to be untrue in the cause of a government that is known to be the enemy of Western interests. And I'm not talking about like imperialist Western interests or nothing. I'm talking about the right to have whatever job you want to hold, love whoever you want to love, or identify with whatever gender you want to identify, which doesn't really hurt me none at all.
Right. And the thing is, like, the way the DOJ works is they'll pretend to believe those stories until they have proof that the stories are not true. So I have a feeling that it's an ongoing investigation. I have a feeling there's a lot more to come. But if
Oh,
someone
there's
showed me,
huge more to come. If someone
yeah.
said, yeah, I'll give you $100,000 to do a podcast, then ask them why.
Yeah, I think this is one of those. We'll just pretend not to know and we won't ask questions. Because if someone was paying me 100,000 per video, 400,000 and 500,000 a month per video, I would have to be like Taylor Swift. Like, is there anybody else who could get that much? Maybe J-Lo, maybe Beyonce, but any Joe podcaster is not getting $100,000 per video, up to 500,000 a month.
No. I
No.
mean, heck, George Soros only pays us like 10,000 an episode.
I'm still waiting my checks for 10 years now.
Yeah, me too, come to think of it. Okay. Tenet Media doesn't exist anymore. They've been shut down. They are no longer receiving millions of dollars from the Kremlin. And there's probably other networks out there. It's a Hydra's head. But the cool thing is, this one is shut down. Why is that really cool? Anyone can say anything they want to say. Honest to goodness, you have the right to say anything you want. But knowing that a foreign government, one that actually considers the U.S. Constitution, the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, the French Constitution, who considers these documents anti-ethical, who stands against your, my, and all of our freedom, like honest to goodness, I'm glad they're not operating anymore.
Yeah, same here. I don't need people operating with misinformation with big money.
Okay, so if you're an Aussie, I'm going to just jumping the ocean a little bit here. If you're an Aussie, you might be a little bit ticked at Meta, Facebook in Facebook slash Instagram in Australia, because the government was asking questions about AI adoption, and as it turns out, Meta's global privacy director Melinda Klebach was asked whether her company has been collecting Australians' data to train its generative AI technology. Now, I don't know if people know this about Australians or not, but they cannot tell a lie. Their noses grow when they do. It's uncanny. It's something to do with them being upside down all the time. I don't know. But anyway, according to Australia Broadcasting News, ABC News, Claybaugh initially denied that this happened, but upon being pressed, she said, well, yeah, Meta scrapes all the photos and text in Facebook and Instagram posts going as far back as 2007. Unless, of
17
course,
years of info.
the user had set their post to private.
And there is no opt-out option like they give the EU. So it's still going on, and you have no way to stop it. That's kind of
Well,
like all text.
if you're under 18, apparently, they're not bothering you. Of course, once you turn 18, you're fair game. This is incredible. Like, seriously, the thing is, they're probably doing it in North America too. All your photos and text has probably been scooped up by Meta.
Probably.
Mine too.
But this is pretty like brazen, right? All text, all photos, all everything, and Instagram
Well,
for 17 years.
I would strongly urge somebody, an enterprising person, to take Meta's terms and conditions and end user license agreement and shove it through an AI, because goddamn, you ain't gonna read it yourself. None of us believe that you ever did. And find out if this is, I might even do this after the show. Not like I'm gonna read it myself. None of us ever do. Some of us do. They're the ones who don't use Meta.
Yeah, it's just crazy. It's just
Okay,
crazy.
this one's really important for SEOs. This one is actually serious important, and it's really cool because people are starting to. This is how science works. This is how the science of SEO works. A new Google AI overview study says about half the links in AI overviews overlaps with links in traditional Google organic search results. The most linked sources are YouTube and And the cool thing about this report, by the way, was done by Rich Sanger and Lawrence O'Toole of Authoritas. Cool thing about Sanger and O'Toole's report is it matches what Mark Traphagen from SEO Clarity was saying a couple weeks ago. So we got Traphagen and now Sanger and O'Toole, who are both saying that if you rank well in organic search results, you have a better chance of appearing in AI overviews. I think this is cool because, again, people are starting to prove each other's ideas to be right, and also probably proving other ideas to be wrong.
Well, it kind of just makes sense, right? Because they had the disastrous rollout by just using like predictive text, and we joke every week, drinking your urine to cure your kidney stones. So if you're taking things that have been already scored that Google has already determined as quality, then at least you're much less likely to do that when you use the documents to ground the search
I
in the
mean,
AI overview.
I think SEOs were saying when AI overviews, the concept of AI overviews was sort of being floated about that you can see it going this direction, but it's got to be linked to actual strong algorithmic good results. If Google judged this good enough for prime time a year ago, it should be judging it good enough for, I mean, you know what I mean? It should be judging the same algorithmic result sets in the text information, the generative information it's giving to people. This is what we thought was good. This is what we put our company's name behind. Why don't you generate your result sets from it?
Exactly. And some key insights from the link analysis is 21.1% of queries triggers overviews out of 11,163 analyzed queries. Top link domains were YouTube, Wikipedia, and less frequently Southern Living. Apparently one can't
A
drive through the
reputable
snowstorm.
magazine.
It is, but it's just an odd, YouTube, Wikipedia, Southern Living. Overlap with the search
Indeed.
results, 46%. 0.3% of the documents linked in the summaries were from the top organic search results for the exact match query. They included related queries, combination of query types, and the likelihood of a search result document appearing in AI overview depends on its SERP position. A link ranked first has a 53% chance, while content ranked 10th has a 36.9% chance, according to their study. That's all very interesting, I think. And then the I'm sorry, just one last thing. Trends and unaccounted links. Links that just had a presence, weren't directly related, were YouTube and Wikipedia mostly.
Again, we've got I don't know, three researchers. There was also a study done by SE Rankings that was a little more exuberant, but also sort of along these lines. Rank well in Google, you tend to fare. You're more likely to be part of the summaries that are generated in AI overviews. So, Again, the thing I'm loving about this is we're just figuring stuff out as we go along, and we have people confirming each other's findings.
Yeah, and this is new in the last few months. So if you're like, they didn't always do it. This is after the disastrous rollout. I think this is their fix to try
Oh,
to make sure they're,
indeed. Oh my God. Yeah, indeed.
Let's just pull stuff from Reddit. Who thought that would be a problem?
Yeah, well, they very likely solved the glue on pizza problem
Yes, I well,
in doing
hopefully.
this. They've likely solved it. I haven't said they have solved it, but this is a step, big step towards it. Okay, so now the googly stuff. Martin Schmidt saying they do not use EXIF, exchangeable image file format data, for rankings. So the number of times that images is looked at, it's not what, you know what? I
Not
don't
a
know what
ranking
EXIF
format.
data is. What is exchangeable image
If
file format data?
you throw it into a decoder, an image into a decoder, it'll give you a whole bunch of information about
So
the
this
image.
was taken at this location at this time by this
Yeah,
kind of
with this
camera.
lens, with this eye. When you look in your like photo storage and it's like you use this lens and it was like this fast of a shutter speed and it was this date, it does all that. There's also other information in
But
there,
that
but
information is not used for ranking purposes at all.
no, it can be though used for search match purposes. So if you're like, I want all images over 3,000 pixels, it gets that information from the EXIF and that could include it, but it's not a ranking thing. What they do have though is the IPTC file, which is also in there, and that one will be the one that will indicate if something is AI created, and that will be used not for ranking purpose, but for identification purposes for AI created images. But the XF is not used for ranking purposes, just information. So make sure you still have one. It's helpful, but it's just not
So,
ranking position helpful.
I mentioned this story a few minutes ago, and I think it really ties into my question: has anybody making a reliable crawler that will tell me, or a reliable rank checker that will tell me when, how often, and where my clients' URLs are appearing, might be appearing, or my clients' text might be part of AI overviews? Well, Google has just sort of released a warning. This is the Google Indexing API submissions to undergo rigorous spam detection story. So Google's like, well, straight up, Google wants to know if anybody is using its indexing API using multiple accounts or other means to exceed usage quota. If you are, that will result in access being revoked. And this happened a few years back. Who was it? Was it Rank Tracker who got in trouble this way? Designed you know, who got stomped by Google for scraping the index, just constantly making queries and
Yeah.
radically going over its use quota. And then they tried to step around it, and Google crushed them like little bugs.
And John Mueller said of Google that most, this is on Search Engine Roundtable, that most sites wrongfully using the indexing API are spammy anyway. So they're going to assume you're a spam site if you're doing this. And that can be very bad for you. As a reminder, the Google indexing API should just be used for job postings and live stream content, nothing else. So if you're using it for other purposes, it won't work. And you could find yourself in trouble with Google identifying you as a spam site.
Yeah, so this is if you're trying to throw a bunch of new content into the index, you're gonna get burned. But at the same time, if you're spamming the index with queries, you're gonna get burned.
Yeah.
Anything that is making Google do an inordinate amount of work, and it's clear that you're not just using Google to do searches, they're gonna go after you. If you're building your business on putting stuff in Google, or telling, or again, scraping Google's content, they're going to burn you. That's basically what they want you to know.
Burn, baby, burn. Sorry, just going for
Yeah. Okay,
a minute.
so Google Chrome is no longer supporting First input delay, no longer measuring that metric. It's now the INP, interaction to next paint. So don't look for metrics on FID, because FID is finished. It's now INP, interaction to next paint.
FID, you should have been moved off of it, like, I think about a year ago. I think that's when they, yeah. So if you haven't, it's time to make the jump. But that is what Chrome will be using going forward. It'll remove FID related fields from its schema starting in the 2002409 data set, scheduled for release in October. So FID is finally dead. I couldn't bring a word to the eye.
So have you ever had people, I got this new client again. They're in the floral field, and new clients ask them, and they ask a whole bunch of questions, and them not knowing how search works necessarily doesn't mean that they don't know computers or they don't know anything. So they've never really thought through how search works. So one of the questions is, will you be able to tell us what gave us good rankings? What did you do to our page that gave us good rankings? And I had to say, well, I don't think I'll be able to tell you, because we're going to do a lot of things to your page, to your site, all of which are going to work in conjunction to make the website, you know, easier for Google to read and to get you. Cumulatively, this should get you good rankings and more attention from the search engines. That's the good SEO answer, right? But people still insist, and many SEOs even sell, if you do one thing, this thing, change your titles, change your headings, and you know this will work. And it won't. So John Mueller answers the question. And, you know, I think somebody asked, if I change my headings, and work on a hierarchical progression, will that fix my rankings? It won't, but it'll make your site better.
Yeah, so this is, again, similar to what we just said. It's not a ranking element. It's a help Google figure things out. And so it has value, just not big value, and it's not going to help you rank better. But it will help you match queries better, because Google will better understand your page and what your page is about. So, and also, it is an accessibility element, proper H1s,
yep.
2s, 3s, 4s, and 5s. And soon, in the next year or two, there will be an accessibility law for websites. So you might as well, if you're building one right now, do it the right way. Also, don't use double H1s or multiple H1s. That in the W3C is a specific use case that is not for common websites. And it confuses people who use accessibility devices, because they should only have one H1. So Google won't penalize you for it, but it's not good for users that have to use devices to read your content. Also, you could confuse Google by giving it two main topics for the page.
Also, SEOs, watch out for developers who are using H1 stylistically rather than tactically. It'll drive you crazy, but once you start calling them on it, you can't stop. So start doing it again.
My last four audits all had double H1s.
And if you get anything out of this little segment at all, it's this: don't chase after ranking factors. Don't make
but
better websites. They're all ranking. It's all a ranking factor.
No,
put
no,
it all together. No, it is.
No,
the totality. What I'm saying, Christine, the ranking factor is the totality of your work. That's the ranking factor.
Yes and no. I do recoveries, right? So there are certain things that work for the core update that wouldn't work for another update.
But
so,
don't chase them. SEOs, don't chase them.
You know what I tell everybody, though? Go read the ranking systems documentation in Google Developer Docs, because out of SEOs I ask, have they read it? It's like 1 out of 10. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they know everything about the quality raters guide, but they have never read the ranking systems documentation. No. Read the ranking systems documentation.
But again, I'm going to say this again. I mean, you might poo-poo me all you want. The real ranking factor here is doing as much good work on a website as possible, the totality of your optimization effort.
We really disagree.
Because it's not one thing or the other or the other or the other.
Good work, but you have to know what the good work is, right? If I spend a bunch of time doing work that Google doesn't evaluate, it's not going to help me rank better. So
oh, agreed. Oh, agreed on that, sure.
So you understand that. And then, yes, it is holistic.
If the head is clearly... When you're doing your audit, the head is clearly broken, and the search engine simply isn't reading pages. You can say fixing that fixes the problem. In some cases, absolutely.
Also, like you have a site and you go pay authors who are quote experts, you may do better with users if you're like in the medical field or something, but Google's not giving you any ranking points for that. You're not scoring higher because of that.
Not
So,
necessarily.
but if, no,
Not
yes.
necessarily, but if it's much better writing, but you can get the much better
Well, the
writing from
writing is
another
different.
writer.
Sure. The writing's different. I just meant like changing the author name, right? So yeah, a lot of times when people say author made the difference, I'm like, well, what'd you do? Like we rewrote all the content. Oh, an expert rewrote all your content? That might be why you're doing better than an author's name. So, but I'm just saying, like, you just need to know what Google is actually evaluating. So, but we agree, actually.
Okay, that's a roundabout way of agreeing on stuff. Okay,
Okay.
we are about 5, maybe 6 minutes away from end of show. We're getting also pretty close to end of stories. Where do you want to go?
Let's see. Well, I think the Wayback Machine
What the?
getting prime placement in Google is kind of a cool thing.
It is a cool thing. It's a cool thing, but I'm not interested in the. Okay, so Google's replacing its cache link with a link to the Wayback
Yeah,
Machine.
which isn't a good thing.
I'm not interested in the Wayback Machine's impression of the website. I'm interested in Google's impression of that website. When you search
Yes.
Google, and when we affect pages in Google, we're not affecting the live web. We're affecting Google's photocopy of the live web.
Yeah, and when I was at Black Hat and DEF CON this year, I had a number of engineers when they found out I was an SEO, which I don't tell a lot of people there. They're like, oh my gosh, why did Google take away the cache? I'm like, yeah. They're like, oh my gosh, I need the cache. They're cybersecurity people, right? They have other uses for the cache than we have, but all of us had big uses for that cache. And so taking away the Internet Archive is not a replacement for that at all.
And the archive will save your ass for a bunch of other reasons, but
Yeah.
it's not the cache.
Well, when I'm
So,
like reviewing a site and it might be hacked, I could go to the cache and see what the page looks like.
yes.
Or I could see the last time Google called the page so I know if Google's actually calling the site because I don't usually have access to logs. So it gave me a lot of information. It was very, very important. And I think for whatever reason that they got rid of it, unfortunately, there are two industries, cybersecurity and us, who really relied on that cache. So I think it's unfortunate that they did that. But the good part is, at least the Internet Archive will be getting a lot of presence. Although someone in the industry had a really good point, and I wish I remember who it was. We're going to get hit with a lot more traffic, so hopefully Google's going to help chip in on that. They
Yeah,
might not be prepared for that, right?
The little Wikipedia-like messages are going to be coming up. To use the archive, just give us like $3 for less than a cup of coffee.
And I'm going to take a pop your screen. The other thing, too, by the way, cool thing with Screaming Frog, is if you want to commit the site you're crawling to the archive, there's a checkmark box in there. Just click it on. And then when you crawl your client site or whatever site you're crawling, it will make sure all the pages go to the Wayback Machine.
That's a really cool little feature, actually. That's a smart thing to do, to include.
Yeah, it's super helpful. And also, if, like, you just really like a site and you're like, hey, I'll just crawl it and make sure everything gets stored. You know, it's a nice little secret tool that we have now where you can store sites to the archive.
Yep. Okay. What is next? Google, get definitions and translations as you search. So it's sort of like auto telling me.
Sure. yeah, it's going to give you, it's, you're going to be allowed to like look up words while you search, I guess. So,
well, that's kind of good because I don't know about you, but Google's my dictionary. You know, when I'm writing and I don't know how to spell a word, which is, you know, happening with more and more frequency as I get older, I go to Google, I start typing the word in, and Google autofills the word. Clearly, that's what I was looking for. Conscience and caution and conscience are the ones that get me all the time.
Yeah, I have words like that too.
Debt and debit. Those ones get me all the time. I think this is actually a very cool thing. It'll improve the use of Latin online tremendously.
Yeah, so what it does is there'll be a little button that shows up usually under the featured snippet, or I don't know if it shows up under AI reviews, and it just says, get definitions and translations as you search. You click that, and then you'll start getting those on the right-hand side. So it's not new, but apparently, like, it's kind of reborn, so... So yay. I have something handy to use.
Okay, so Google is, you're going to see on Google screens, and this is actually a good thing given how Google is using structured data and product snippets to bring up product images from your website in search results. Sponsored results, ads in search results are going to be very prominently noted as a promoted product, sponsored promoted product, big gray bar above it. I think it's a good thing.
Yeah, do you think this has anything to do with all their antitrust cases?
You think?
You and I
We
both
don't,
agree.
yeah,
Every time
absolutely.
Google needs to make the bank for Wall Street, suddenly they do an ad change. Like, let's do infinite scroll and stick ads in the middle of the scroll. So the fact that they're making them stand out this big, they've never done that before.
That these are pretty prominent. I
Yeah.
haven't seen these in the wild yet, so I don't know what they're actually going to look like when you really see them in search results. But yeah, that's
But it's a gray box that's like little like almost lines down, and then on the bottom lines up, and it's like all results here, promoted results here. So it is very, very prominent. So we'll see. And we'll see what that does to their ad revenue, because I think a lot of people mistakenly click on ads and don't realize it.
okay, last story, at least last story on the grid. If you have a video, a Google video, that's and you don't want it seen in certain regions, there is now a command you can use and Google supports that will, allow you to set the region, a regions allowed property, letting you specify what regions can and can't see your video results. Neat.
Yes, which yes, and there is one story we missed, if you don't mind me moving on to that, because we sometimes we like to give people a little PSA. So criminals are using artificial intelligence to scam
Oh,
people out of money. Yeah, so this guy lost $6,000 because somebody cloned his brother's voice and said he'd been injured in an accident, and apparently on the phone they got like a lawyer and somebody who's supposedly a doctor, all of it fake. And they thought his brother needed help, and so they wired the money. And of course, the money was gone. It was a scam. So be very careful. I know I'm going to make a safe words joke, but not only for the bedroom anymore. Have a safe word with family and friends, so you can ask something, you can say it to somebody, and if they don't reply, you 100% know that this is a voice AI voice clip, because they only need 3 seconds of a voice to make a clip. And the only thing he said he realized was different afterwards was there's no nuances to the voice. So he's like, he didn't realize at the time that that's what was going on, but said that there are no nuances, so he should have probably picked up on it. I don't think he should have. I mean, you're told your brother's in jail, you're being called, the lawyer's calling you, the doctor's calling you. Like, it's not even just a one man thing anymore, right?
Well, I was pretty
There's
sure
bail
it was
bondsmen.
Mikey, but he didn't sound stoned,
Yeah.
he sounded really normal.
Yeah,
So I
so the
wasn't
people that
sure.
called him were a lawyer and a bail bondsman. And at some point, I think there was also a doctor or something. So they used multiple fake AI voices to call this guy to pressure him to send the money because he said his brother was in jail. Like, I guess you might get one, you'd be like, oh, that's probably not real. But you get three, like the bail bondsman calls you and the lawyer
No.
calls you and your brother's in jail. Like,
Well,
that's a pretty good scam.
moreover, remember, this is all electronic. They could have a phone bank hitting 10,000 people in a
Yes.
day. All they need is one, and they've been had a successful day.
Yeah, very true. So just be careful. And I just think the safe word's the easiest way, because if you have that safe word between family and friends, no one else knows it, then it's a really easy way to check. Or
Okay.
safe phrase or something,
Rutabaga.
Rutabaga.
Rutabaga. There you go. Rutabaga. Okay,
Rutabaga
on
drink. That's
that,
our safe word. Nobody
we have
knows.
gone full clock. We got all the way around. It's been just over an hour, and this was a really fun show. Rutabaga. So you know it's us and not our AI counterparts as made by like Google AI. Rutabaga. This is us
Rutabaga.
for real.
Rutabaga. Of course, now we have 3 seconds of the same rutabaga, so
Oh, shoot. Okay, well, we're not using rutabaga anymore. We have to change. We're changing it every week, you see.
all
Okay, friends, On behalf of Christine Schackinger from Sites Without Walls, this is Jim Hedge from Digital Always Media. You've been listening to Web Ecology recorded live to podcast on the 12th of September, 2024 at WMR.FM. Special thanks to Ricky and Brasco in the studio and Darren and Brandy in the office. Thanks to Wix Studio and to Audience Key, our sponsors. And thanks to you, our listeners. If you're listening on YouTube, hit that like button. Smash whatever it is you got to smash. I don't even know how that damn stuff works, but do it, please, because then you'll hear more of us, which of course everybody wants to. Rutabaga, we're for real, I swear. Be kind to each other, rank well, do great. We'll talk to you next week.
Bye, everybody.